Hello, welcome back to the Robin the Regulator show on Fifth Wrist Radio. I'm here with my co-host, the Watch Regulator, otherwise known as Alex, or Alex, otherwise known as the Watch Regulator. I've got our special guest. We have a special guest here with us today, Adam Craniotis. Have I got that right?
You did. You got to. I'm trying not to laugh, man. I'm sorry.
Did I say Adam or Alex? Anyway, Adam
you
from
said
Red
Adam?
Bar. Yeah, good, good. Okay. Adam, who some of you might know as people know Red Bar. Adam is the founder and creator and everything else of Red Bar, based in New York. New York, the epicenter of where everything's happening these days. But anyway, here he is. How are you going, Adam?
Hey, gentlemen, thank you for having me. First of all, you know, you get top marks, the name, everything was perfect.
Brilliant. But you won't remember me. You only said you remember the people that pronounce your name wrong.
Well, my name is actually Alan. It's not Adam. But, I mean, otherwise, you got it. Yeah, you got it. You got it perfect beyond that.
That's cool. Okay. So, Red Bar, you know, I'm not sure if you've ever listened to any of our things. And now Alex pretty much expects me to introduce stuff by people by saying we got no sort of structure here.
No clue, no structure, no vision.
That's how I operate. So
That's why I reached out, because I saw one of your Instagram lives and thought, this guy's almost as bad as us. Better get him on and see if we can just
see how badly we can, you know, muck this up.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, it's great to have you.
You know what it is? It's like a fat person hanging out with fatter people. Right. So if you get me on here, it makes you guys actually look better.
I might make you look better, actually.
I think you underestimate how fat
you totally
you
can see me, can't you? You said it again. I know there's a camera on there. I know you guys are watching me. I put a shirt on.
As long as you got a shirt on. Doesn't matter about the pants. Below the desk, we can't see. It's okay.
Exactly.
So, I've said the welcome. Oh, hang on. We better start off in the right order of things.
This is the only bit of kind of structure we have in the whole thing, is this bit right at the very beginning.
And you messed me up now. I lost my train. Lost my train of thought. But it's, 11-ish? It's quite late. Well, not that late, but it's New York time. What are you drinking, Adam?
Since my wife's not in the room, I just have to preface this by saying that when we started quarantine, I really just, I didn't realize it was a marathon. I kind of did the sprint, and I drank a lot. And so my wife was just monitoring all the different bottles as they were going down. And she finally was like, honey, we've been indoors for like 2 hours. Like, what are you doing? You know? And so she hid all the booze. And so I'm slowly like being allowed back in. But I hid a bottle in our apartment of Macallan 12. I have to speak a little because I don't know where she is right now. And so I found it. And I did actually, it was one of those stupid things where I hid it so well that I forgot where I put it. So I knew it was here, but I couldn't let her catch me looking for it, because we have a house in Connecticut outside of the city. And so we went there initially to hide out. And that's where, of course, she was like, I'm pouring out all your alcohol and you suck and you have a problem and we're going to have to talk about this. But we got back in the city now. And so I found it, is what I'm saying, basically. So I have in a coffee mug some Macallan 12.
Brilliant.
So there you go. That's what I'm drinking. I'm sorry, but I had to let you know that this was an adventure. This is just for you guys.
We like adventures. That's all good.
I smell it on my breath. Yeah, yeah.
I thought I did smell something, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure whether it's you or
God, now you can smell shit between – this is – okay. Oh, wait. Really really quickly, and we're going to get moving forward, because I know I'm cutting – I'm messing up your
– No, it's fine.
Here, but
you're really not.
I curse a lot, and I've gotten in trouble for that on some other podcasts. As a matter of fact, one, they said – it was a world record for the amount of bleeps that they had to put in before they could air it. So should I watch what I'm saying? Because I will.
No.
Definitely no, not. And we won't bleep
fucking
in there.
Good on you, mate.
My mum won't listen to this one. That's all.
She never listened to it. I had a feeling about you guys. All right, so there we go. I'm going to get progressively worse.
That's fine. So we know you're drinking out of a coffee mug. That's cool. Good. Alex, what are you drinking? A pint of something. Alex drinks in pints.
Yeah, a pint of Stonyfell Cabernet Sauvignon.
What?
Wow.
He's getting all posh.
That's pretty ritzy. Seriously. Check out Diamond Jim Brady over here.
But he's in a pint glass, so it's not quite as sophisticated.
But it's in a pint glass, so. Yeah. That makes it work. All right, we'll let it.
Why don't you just? Well, you should just drink out of the bottle, Alex. What do you bother putting it in a pint glass for?
I'm not an animal, Rob. Come on, I'm not a philistine.
He's got standards, you know.
Oh dear. Well, I think I'm in the earliest time zone here. It's still morning, which is no excuse, I know. But
you better have a drink, Rob. You better have a drink.
I have a couple of drinks. It's beer o'clock somewhere, but I haven't gotten the beers yet. I was explaining to Alex before, I've got a bit of a cold. So which is why my voice sounds like it's broken. So I've got a cold. So I'm having a cold brew Suntory Coffee Boss coffee in a can from Japan. And that's just my, because I had a couple of coffees. I got up this morning, slept in, got up, and then my kids were cooking pancakes. I mean, it was brilliant. For a Saturday morning. So I was quite happy. And then, to help my cold and stuff along, I've got a Barocca. You know what them, you probably don't have that there. It's like a,
no idea what you just said.
It's like a vitamin juice.
It's a vitamin juice, but I've added about half a glass of Campari into that. And some other stuff.
Okay.
Found in
kinky.
There. I'm trying to make it. I'm pretending it's like a proper. I don't know. I'm pretending I'm Waco with his. What does he drink again?
Negronis.
Negroni time.
Yeah. It kind of looks.
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you because I don't know if you'll listen to this or not, but I hate Negronis. I really am not a Negroni guy. And I feel like it's because I'm just not classy.
But you have a beard. You've got the hipster beard, right?
Yeah, I've got the beard.
Yeah, except that it's not ironic. It just covers up the fact that I don't have a jawline anymore. You know? You can pretend that it's under there, but it's not.
Well, that's my effort at alcohol, really. I mean, it's a bit poor, but I mean, I am a bit under the weather.
It's
but
11,
anyway.
It's 11 in the morning. You're under the weather. You're home. Your kids made you pancakes. Honestly, I think you're doing it real gangster
style. I'm doing
style,
okay.
So.
Yeah. I'm not too bad.
No. It's not acceptable for me.
I tried.
I really don't appreciate you coming in here, Adam, and like just throwing your weight around, saying what's acceptable or not.
Shut it up, sir.
Oh no, it's going downhill. What are you wearing, Adam? I'm curious to know what you're wearing. I'm not saying under the desk or under your kilt.
I was like, wow, he is just lobbing grapefruits, man. I'm gonna smack this one right out of the park.
Wrist-wise.
I can't go
on your
there.
Wrist.
Yeah,
wrist, on your wrist.
On my wrist. On my wrist. Not on any other appendages, right?
No.
That is a family show. Okay. Actually, it's interesting. Ever since this quarantine started, I've kind of been going back to the beginning, back to my roots, and I started with digital watches. You know, as a kid. My first watch was a Casio F7. And that was like, I got that, I think, the summer of 1980, maybe. And I was about 10 years. No, how old was I in 80? I was 8 years old then. Shit. Wow. Sorry. That's a whole other existential thing I have to deal with, just being old. But so I started looking into just kind of like the sort of seminal watches from, you know, the LED era, from the early LCD era, that, you know, people don't really think about. It's like, this was the stuff that was supposed to replace mechanical watches, you know, and that if you were cool, you weren't wearing a Rolex, you weren't wearing a Submariner or an Omega Seamaster, you know, you were wearing a Pulsar, you know, P2 with a LED display, or you were wearing this or that. So the watch I actually have on is a Seiko 0634, which is their first LCD chronograph, 1976. And so I got it for a good price, actually from a Red Bar guy. And, you know, it's funny when you wear it, you feel a little bit like a dork, a little bit like a geek. But then you also kind of think to yourself, when this watch came out, though, this cost more than an Omega Speedmaster. And in fact, you probably had a better chance of getting laid at the club with this than you did with that. You know, and oh, how times have changed. But I don't know, when I wear it, it's just... like when you set the time, it actually has a crown and you pull it out just like you would pull out the crown on a regular mechanical watch. They kind of said, well, we don't really know how to do this shit yet. So I guess people are used to pulling out a crown. So that's how we're going to set the time on this thing. So it's kind of funny, but I don't know why I'm in this rabbit hole now. And so I should be wearing like a perpetual calendar for you guys or
nah.
something cool. But you know what? It's funny. So there, I'll shut up. Go. Keep going. I know I keep.
No, that's awesome. That's cool. I mean, I know you've got a few of those, the actual LED, the pulsars and stuff, right?
And it's all recent. You know, I just kind of started really diving deep into that crap. It's also, to be fair, it's also stuff I can afford. I'm not, yeah, there's so many things I want, but I'm definitely not raking in the dough like I used to. And like I used to was still not like I used to. So it's, yeah. Shut it up, sir.
No, that's fine. That way we it is going back to our childhood, basically, that those sort of things. I remember my brother and I, we had digital citizens, and I think I had an old Casio, the very first one when I was a kid before my grandma gave me my first proper watch. But yeah, that Seiko, for example, that sort of thing, it just takes you back, doesn't it? I remember guys wearing them thinking, wow, they were just the coolest dudes in the room.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, that was my gateway. Well, what's Rob wearing under his kilt?
Well,
that's you have.
Yeah, I'm just got the old. I don't think I have a digital watch. I'm feeling left out now. I wish I had an old. I used to have an Anadigi Temp, a Citizen Anadigi Temp, which was the coolest thing I had.
I love those things. I got one of those somewhere.
I'm gonna go and buy a replica because apparently they're doing lots of replicas now.
Well, no, they're making them. They've reissued that watch, so you can actually go buy that new now if you want. And
I've got to find one. I've got to try one.
At least get a G-Shock or something. Come on.
The kids got G-Shock. I have a G-Shock, but it's dead. I'm a draw here. So what I'm wearing is an old. I've got an old Tudor sub on, like a 68 sub.
Beautiful.
I think it's a 7016. I think it's that was the. I'm sure. Yeah, 7016. I think it is.
Now. With that model, was that still with the Rose logo, or that's?
I think it's after. Hang on. No, it is. I can't see. Okay. No, it's got the shield.
What a way to find out you've gone blind on a podcast.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a little under the weather. I've also gone blind, but aside from that, you know, the kids made pancakes.
I can smell them.
I'm sure it'll come back.
It doesn't. To answer your question, it's got the shield. I mean, okay. They had both. They had a bit of both.
It's the 7029. You know what? I'm going to shut up now. I don't know what I'm just spitting. I'm just making numbers up. Yeah.
I got it. It's got a really, really pale ghost bezel and a really crater. The dial is really, it's all gone all bubbly and stuff. It's mm-hmm. I got it
off. Those models did that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great thing.
With the way that they painted or did the dials, our photographer for Red Bar, Adam Moore, has one of those, and it's funny because you know it's a defect.
Yeah, I've seen the photos.
But it's but when you look at it, honestly, the texture is just so unique. You're kind of like, wait, was that on purpose? Like, I would like my shit to fuck up and be cooler than when it was. It doesn't always happen like that.
Well, I got this off a guy. You'd know him. You know. Orange watch collector.
Yeah, I love that guy. As a matter of fact, when I used to work for Macy's, he came to New York and we had lunch at the McDonald's on the 7th
floor.
Yeah,
okay. Yep. He's a good mate of mine.
I show people a good time. McDonald's.
Yeah. McDonald's.
Yeah. At the Macy's store, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, he knew I was into Tudors. Sorry, every time we talk about someone's watch, we get the whole story. But I mean, I'm a bit into Tudors, old and new. And I actually had an Instagram. I still have it called the Tudor guy. I don't use as much. And he said, "Oh, you're the Tudor guy. Buy this." I bought it in a job lot at an auction or something. He bought it, and it was in great condition. For its age, with this really, really cool ghost bezel with box and papers, everything.
Oh, so you got the whole kit. That's cool.
Yeah. And he said, make me an offer. So I did, and I bought it off him. I picked it up at Basel whenever it was a couple of years ago. And I think I've met you there or at SIHH with him or with somebody. You know how you meet so many people just really briefly and then you go on your way. And so I'm pretty sure, with him and Mo and these guys. We had Mo on the show here a few weeks ago, Mo. So that's my old 68 sub. What are you wearing, Alex? We're moving right along.
You can't say you're moving right along if it takes 4 hours to move right along.
I know. Well, we're finally moving right along. Eventually, we're moving along.
I'm wearing a watch that one of the listeners and one of the people who write on the website sent me.
Ooh.
Through the post, sent all the way from the States. I'm wearing a little Anikar dress watch. It's beautiful.
Really?
Yeah,
nice.
My friend Stuart, shout out to Stuart, Watch Brosophus on Instagram, sent me this lovely little manual wind watch. Such a really lovely gift to get, especially when the whole world is turning to shit right now.
Yeah.
And nice, when somebody does something nice. So Yeah, thanks, Stuart, for sending me that. It's a nice gift.
Those little things though are what we need right now to kind of restore our faith. So I think they're yeah. larger gestures than we think.
Absolutely. What have you dated it? Do you know roughly what it? How is it, an older piece or?
I only got it yesterday, so yeah, no idea. I'll find out.
Shoot me a picture. That sounds interesting. Okay. Oh, that's it. We're only 15 minutes in. We've already covered drinks and watches. What's going on? Normally it takes much longer. Well,
yeah, half an hour normally.
Okay.
What? you guys are making me feel like I'm slowing shit down.
No, you're speeding things up.
Oh, all right. So are we done?
Yeah.
You got somewhere to go?
Oh, shit. Actually, no. I don't.
Well, I wanted to hear a bit about Red Bar, basically, and how it all come about. I mean, that's a pretty general sort of opening, but Nick, talk us through it a little bit. Adam,
I'm happy to. First of all, I love talking. So right there, yeah. I think we're good.
We're good.
I love talking about Red Bar because it also is talking about watches, which are things I love to talk about. So you're asking me the right question. And to talk about Red Bar, we got to step into the Wayback Machine. And we're going to go all the way back to, I think, around June of 2007. Might be a little earlier than that. I recall it being a little chillier out. But there's a watchmaker, a rather controversial fellow at this point in the industry, Michael Kobold. I don't know if you've been following what's going on with his brand. He's an American German guy, moved to America, started a company, Kobold Watches, one of the first people to actually start selling watches online. And basically, there's been a lot of, you know, issues lately with the company, and then he's kind of now in Nepal and not here, but then he can't come back, and now he's involved in politics out there, but the company had people's watches that they weren't getting, and then things, you know, everything just got all mixed. All I know is that before all that shit went down, I had one of his watches, the Kobold Seal, which I loved, and I still have it. I still love it. It's still a great watch. I actually think he's a great guy. I know him personally. I can't speak to anything else that's going on with him, but suffice to say, this cat decided he was going to come to New York. I guess he had a speaking engagement, and so he invited people, if they wanted to meet him for lunch down in the Meatpacking District, and I'm like, I hadn't really gone to any of these things. You know, I was active on the forums. I mean, back then, I think we had, you know, obviously Time Zone, Watch You Seek, The Purists, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Hodinkee, I think it started up at that point. A blog to watch, I think, was then a blog to read, but was still out there. You know, Ariel was kind of doing his thing. And so, you know, I thought, all right, let me go check this out. I own this guy's watch. I'll get to meet a guy who owns a watch company. How exciting. And so I get there early. It's a lunch. And I'm sitting at the bar. So I figure, you know what, let me order a Bloody Mary. I mean, I know I'm going to be late. I'm going to be drunk when I get back to the office. Screw them. It's fine. And I'm sitting there and I look, and the guy next to me is wearing a Kobold. So, you know, me being the really intelligent, observant person I am, I put, you know, one and one together, and I go, oh, wait, you're here for the lunch. I'm Adam. Turns out, you know, we know each other online, but we'd never met, obviously, in real life, and it's this guy, Dr. Jeffrey Jacques. Seems like a nice cat. Time comes. We go. We have lunch. Some other people show up. Mike's a great guy. Eats, like, so much food. That was my takeaway. This cat can eat like a motherfucker. And he wasn't that big. And so anyway, that's neither here nor there. But we're walking to the subway now, me and this guy, Jeff, and we realize that we work like three blocks away from each other. I'm like, you're not an asshole. I'm not an asshole. What if we just like hang out once in a while and talk about watches? You know, because for me, at that point in time, like anyone who knew I was into watches, the conversation, and I think a lot of people can identify with this, it goes, oh, hey, you know, you're the watch guy. Oh, what are you wearing? Let's just say you're wearing a Rolex. Oh, yeah, I'm wearing a Rolex. Oh, wow, yeah, how much did that cost? And you're like, oh, you know, it costs so much money. And then from there, it goes one of two ways. Like either, wow, you know, you're stupid because I'm wearing this watch and it was $40 and it keeps perfect time. Or, wow, you must be rich. Like, I couldn't spend that kind of money. Can you lend me some? And so they don't care about the watch. And here was someone for the first time, like in person, not online, that I could talk to. And that's not what we're talking about. Like, we want to talk about watches. And so we did it. We found a bar that was sort of equidistant between our offices. And we resolved that once a month, we would just meet the two of us and, I don't know, have a drink and talk. And that sort of once a month thing, you know, then all of a sudden there were three of us then five of us, you know, then 10 of us. Now we're meeting every 2 weeks. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And it was always very impromptu. I mean, there was never an intent to take it beyond that. This was just, you know, shits and giggles, get out of the house, hang out with a couple of people that you shared interest with. And yeah, so that's how it started. And the bar that we met at was this like Korean dive bar called Red Bar. So people asked for the name. They asked where the name came from and what happened. Ultimately, the bar closed down and we moved to a different spot. But what I was doing is I was sending emails out, you know, to just a loose list of people or whatever. Everybody's name's just in there too. And, you know, I wasn't like hiding people's name. I mean, it was very shoestring kind of operation here. But I would say like, okay, well, we'll meet at Red Bar Tuesday, you know, because, you know, we didn't really have a set time. Like, all right, how do people feel about Thursday this week? Red Bar Thursday? And I would get emails from people like, are we doing Red Bar this week? Red Bar, Red Bar, Red Bar. So when we moved, I'm like, well, what do I say? I can't call it like this new bar's name because it just didn't really roll off the tongue trippingly. And then I just like, you know what, fuck it. Let's just keep calling it Red Bar. And that was it. So it just stuck. And it went from there. So it has nothing to do with watches, the name. It's just that's where we first got pissy drunk together.
That's intriguing. I always thought it was something to do with the red text on a 5.5 or whatever it is, one of those old Rolexes and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not that deep. Yeah. I like that better. I think that's how I'm going to start telling the story. I'm taking notes. So,
how did it change, though, from being a one-chapter deal to being like all over the world? How does that happen and how quickly does that happen? And
it actually happened fairly quickly. And that honestly is the same, sort of goes in lockstep with the rise of social media. You know, when we first started doing this stuff, Twitter, I don't think you could even put photographs on, and, you know, limited to 120 characters. And if Instagram was a thing, it had just started. I don't even know when Instagram got big. What we did is eventually we started putting pictures on Instagram. We created an Instagram account. And it was sort of from there that people would see like, hey, wait, you know, every, say, Thursday, you know, you guys are hanging out and you're posting all these great pictures of watches. And, you know, posting pictures of, you know, a pint of beer, a shot glass or two. And it looks like you're having so much fun. And, you know, where I am, we don't have that. You know, how can we get that? How can I have that? And so they would ask me to kind of like, you know, what's your secret sauce? And I would just tell people, you know, look, it's you just find a couple guys who share your interest and hang out and just let it grow organically. You know, we're not trolling for members. We're not, you know, it just sort of happens. And so other people, I think, got the idea. And then they, which is interesting to me, they would ask, well, look, you know, can we call it Red Bar? I was like, I don't own the rights to that name. You can call it whatever you want, sure. And so that's just how that happened, is that people started, you know, we have I think Toronto was one of our first chapters. And they were just like, well, can we just call it Red Bar Toronto? I was like, sure. I mean, they're so nice, too. They're Canadians. You know, how do you say no to a Canadian? You know, you can't say no. They're all apologetic, like, sorry, you know, don't mean to step on your toes. I don't know what that's all about. And they're gonna listen to this and be like, yeah, they're gonna be like, you know, fuck Red Bar, we're changing our name right now. But yeah, that's how that started. And so I think then when people saw that, okay, well, these guys are saying they're a Red Bar, can we call ourselves Red Bar? And then it started to get to a point of like, okay, well, if we have all these people who are doing this, I think we have to have a few ground rules, you know, because we're pretty specific on how we operate, and in the sense of, you know, it's got to be open, it's got to be inclusive. You know, I know what it's like to be on the outside looking in, and it can be intimidating. You know, there's a lot of money involved, there are egos involved, and, you know, you read about, you know, these huge figures in the industry and stuff, and you're like, well, little old me with a Swatch and a Seiko 5, you know, I can't hang with these guys. And so I want people to know that, yeah, as a matter of fact, you can. That's the best part. You know, there's nothing for me that honestly is better than somebody who joins up and, you know, they have the interest. They're going on the sites and stuff. And now they want to sort of meet people and they've got a few watches and then you kind of watch them grow. You know, you see that maybe they come in with a sort of preconceived notion of, well, I like these kinds of watches and that's what I'm going to be into. And then, you know, they try on somebody's this or somebody's that. And all of a sudden, you know, a year from now, even just 6 months from that point, their collection has evolved, you know, their knowledge has grown, and they're teaching you stuff. And that to me is fun. And I don't care if you're bringing, you know, Tiffany stamped, you know, Nautiluses and, you know, vintage Rolexes with the Mark IV dial and the underscore and those, you know, I mean, I definitely want to see that stuff, but that's not really the point. And there are clubs that are like that. I knew of clubs like that before Red Bar started, and I was never good enough to be invited to join any of these clubs. So for me, it was a very specific thing that with Red Bar, anybody can join. Anybody can be a part of it. Just, you know, don't rob us, obviously. Like, so we had two rules. First rule, no assholes. You know, if you're an asshole, it's a one strike rule. And there's the door. Get the fuck out. Second rule, no Invictas. And beyond that, like, we're fine.
I like that rule. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, the Invicta thing, and you go, but wait, you said no assholes, no snobs, none of that stuff. Right. But here's the thing. Invictas suck. And so we're trying to teach you not to, you can spend the same amount of money and get a Casio or a yep. Seiko or a Citizen, or there's so many other options, and you'll get a watch that's original, maybe a little provenance and something you can be proud of, as opposed to a piece of shit. So
just leave your Invicta at the door. Okay.
Well, and that's the thing. You can still come. You can own 100 Invictas, and you can still come to Red Bar and have a great time. You just can't bring them.
God, it makes me really want to wear an Invicta to a Red Bar event.
just to see what happens.
That's a red flag to Alex.
Being told what to do.
No, I honestly, if you did show up, I think we'd find a way. Maybe we'd just put a napkin over it or something. I don't know. But so really what it was is then we just wanted the other chapters just to understand that this is how we operate, and we don't want to, you know, there's one chapter, it started getting a little hoity-toity, if you will, and it was getting back to us that people weren't feeling comfortable, and, you know, we went in and, you know, not to use one of your nom de guerre, but we had to regulate a little bit. and so we changed the management structure, if you will, to kind of make it so that people felt like everybody, and it worked, and now it's one of our biggest chapters. But to me, that was always the important thing. And so even now today, we've created a company. It's an LLC, and really just to manage the charitable side of what we do, and just overhead for traveling expenses, that type of stuff. Like, nobody's getting rich here, unfortunately. I still haven't figured that part out of it yet. But again, just to lend some structure. And so that's it. But it's still a very loose, just hang out and have a good time.
And there's not much travel expense needed right now.
You know, I'll tell you, that's the irony. You know, that so much of what we do is based on events. It's based on face-to-face interaction. New York City is, I think, probably the only chapter that meets once a week. And that's just because, you know, we're the oldest. You know, we already, you know, sort of hit the ground running, so to speak. But, you know, obviously we can't do that anymore. Our other chapters are maybe once a month, twice a month. And of course, they can't meet anymore. But thanks to technology, you know, I think everybody's actually meeting more. You know, the chapters have set up Zoom conferences. We're doing IG Lives. And I mean, in the way that everybody in the industry has kind of, you know, risen to the occasion. And what's interesting to me is that we've had this technology for a while now, and we haven't used it until it became necessary. And what I'm curious to see now is once, hopefully not too long, that we can get a semblance of normality back, you know, will we sort of abandon this, or are we going to keep that momentum going? And I hope the answer is that we keep it going, because for me, I probably have visited more Red Bars since quarantine began than I did, you know, all last year, because I can just log in and now I can see people all over the world and that I couldn't afford to do, or I didn't have the time to do before. So, I mean, it's interesting how that part has worked out, but there's no substitute for, you know, hanging out. Like, even you guys, like, I honestly, it's great talking to you like this, but wouldn't it be better if we were all just sitting around the same table and drinking Campari and coffee? And
Rob's got coronavirus. I don't want to be in the same room as Rob.
That's what I'm saying. But you see, now we have to think about that. Before, he just would have had pneumonia and we all would have made fun of him. You know?
You can still make fun of me. That's all right.
When you're talking about the way that the Red Bar is kind of existing now, what, I mean, you must be thinking about what the future holds. I know you're talking about maybe having a mixture of both things, but what do you see as the future of Red Bar?
I think that, first of all, a lot of it really depends on how things pan out with the virus. You know, we need to find a vaccine. And even from there, it has to be distributed. You know, people have to get it. And I think even after that happens, the sense memory of all of this is going to stick with us. People are still going to be gun shy in terms of, I think, being out and about. So I think it's hard to say how that's going to work out. We all want to believe that we're going to just pick up where we left off. I know that our first main concern is we have our second annual global meetup, which is supposed to take place in London in mid-September. And obviously the way things are shaping up right now, I can say with a certain degree of certainty that we're probably going to have to push that back. And so we're making, arrangements to do a virtual meetup, to have different chapters kind of come together in their own way. We'll link everybody up via video. The speakers that we have lined up, we're going to have them doing Zoom conferences. It won't be the same, but I'm wondering if, that's kind of a template for how we're going to have to operate going forward for, I guess, longer than we would hope.
I guess you can get more people attending. That's the thing. I mean, you might get extra growth from something like that that you wouldn't have got before. Everyone's going to have to learn new ways to do things. I think that's...
It's really, yeah. I wish I could say that I had some crystal ball or some insight into how that's going to work out, but it's anybody's guess at this point.
Well, when you were talking earlier on about you're not getting rich from Red Bar, I mean, I think that's something that appeals to me about Red Bar, because Rob and probably a lot of people that listen to the podcast know I have an issue with people or businesses that I feel take advantage of enthusiast communities or in anything, not just watches. So it's nice to see a business or an entity that's going about doing business and it's actually giving something to the community. And people, sure, people are employed and there's an income and stuff there for people, but it's a service you're providing. There's not really nothing that I'm aware of. There's nothing really kind of shady going on. You connect enthusiasts with brands.
I wish I could find a way to take advantage of all these poor sods that come and hang out with us. But it's funny you say that, because when we started it as a professional concern, if you will, I brought along two friends of mine, Kathleen McGivney and James Lambden. And James Lambden, I think people will know, he's the founder of Analog Shift and been a good friend of mine even before Analog Shift. I mean, we were both just complete semi-functional alcoholic nobodies before we started doing all this crap. And Kathleen is a good friend of mine from many years back, more years than I think she would care for me to share with anybody, and more years than I care to even remember. She just also happens to be incredibly intelligent, incredibly organized. So she's the CEO, if you will. She's the brains, really. I think I'm the public face. James is the guy in the background. And all three of us, when we sat down and said, look, how do we take control of this thing? And how do we make it work better? The first thing we thought is charity. How are we going to make this something that helps other people? And the initial goal was to set it up as a 501c3, which in the United States means that it's a nonprofit. And what we found as we looked into that is the hoops you have to jump through in terms of having a board and taxes and all this stuff. It was more than we were able or willing to handle. So we created it as an LLC, and then we established the Red Bar Fund, which we have managed for us by a company that is a 501c3. And what we do is we put money into that fund. But once we put that money in there, we can't take it back out. So I can't pull a Trump.
God damn you. I was about to say you should get a Trump Foundation.
Yeah, get a $10,000 portrait of myself to hang in our office, which I wish I could. I can't do that. And then the money can only then go to another 501c3 or legitimate charity that we specify. And so that's really what we do now. And so what we do is every quarter we look at the amount of money that we've made. Again, it's never as much as we would hope. And then we take a portion of that to put into that fund. And like, for instance, with the Oris watch that we did a wonderful limited edition Diver 65 with Oris, and we made 100 watches. And our cut, if you will, 100% of that went to the Red Bar Fund. There's some people who think, we're selling these things and we're making money off it and what have you. But all of these projects we do for charity. And my thought with that, and our thought, really, Kathleen and James, was that if your job and your business and what you do is kind of based around, and let's call it what it is, predominantly white men with more money than they know what to do with who play with their metal Barbie dolls, you better be giving some shit back, dude. And so that's what we do. And so we all have charities that we kind of focus on. For me, it's homelessness. Kathleen works with it, and she's on the board of directors, actually, for charity Bailey House that, in addition to homelessness, really focuses on people with AIDS, disadvantaged youth who have housing issues. And then James is just a weirdo who loves whales. So we donate money to whales as well. But I feel like you have to do that. And look, there's some projects we have in the hopper that hopefully can make us some money. Obviously, I've got a family to feed. I still want to do well, but I can't do well for myself if I'm not doing well for others. So I know my wife wishes I was a little greedier, but I'm like, you do that.
So what do you see as being the legacy of both yourself and Red Bar into the future? So imagine you're dead in X number of years' time. Your kids are there. Your kids are like, I can't believe we left us all these shit watches.
Yeah, no money.
No money. We've got to sell this shit. So what do you see as, what legacy do you want to have and Red Bar have?
First of all, can I just tell you that they've actually gone through my collection at times and like sort of pick and choose, like, well, when you die, can I have this one? Well, like when you're dead, like, who can I have? And I'm like, guys, I'm right here. Like, I'm alive. I'm full of life. Why are we talking about this? So they're actually pretty mercenary when it comes to that shit. So I give them credit. They will be disappointed, I think, in what I leave them financially. And I think that's also that'll build their character. But but in terms of the legacy for me and Red Bar, honestly, I hope it's just that I help some people get into this hobby who maybe wouldn't have or maybe were intimidated initially. Not only got to indulge in something that they grew with and enjoyed, but made some good friends. You know, that's the one thing that I always love. We've had a couple couples meet that have gotten married because of Red Bar, but also I've seen so many friendships and some of my best friends right now. And I'm 47 years old. I'll be 48 as my kids are reminding me, you know, you're closer to 48, Dad. You should say 48. And I'm like, listen, until the day of my birthday, I'm 47, so shut the fuck up. But, you know, and maybe you guys can relate to this. I think you get to a certain age where you stop making new friends, you know, and you've got friends, you know, maybe you kept a couple of your mates from school that you're still with, and maybe, you know, from your job, some good people or your kid's school or something like that. But on the whole, it's not like we're hanging out at singles bars for married people to meet friends. You know, you're just kind of, okay, this is where I'm at. And the thing that an entirely, you know, unexpected result of Red Bar, and I mean, selfishly, I just want to see cool watches that I can't afford. And the more people that come out, the more cool watches I can play with. But I started seeing that, wait, I'm looking, these guys were hanging out that weekend, or somebody posted photos and they went to the kid's birthday. And then you realize that these people have become really good friends. And, you know, and that has nothing even to do with watches at this point. So that's something that I think I would like that to be a big part of my legacy. Not so much the watches, but just that we got good people together and good relationships came out of that.
Because it can be difficult for guys to meet other guys and hang out, unless you're like into sports or MMA, or there has to be something else that guys can be like, hey, do you want to hang out? And a lot of time it can just be like an excuse for people to hang out and have a drink and have a chat.
Well, and you'll find, I know that it's the case in New York, and it's, I'm sure it's the case with other chapters, and I've talked to people too, that maybe half the time you're talking about watches. You know, it's also social. Yeah, we are trying to get more women to come out, and the truth of the matter is, right now it's a predominantly, you know, male-oriented hobby. I think brands are waking up to the fact that women are educated consumers with disposable income, and they should not be condescended or pandered to, as in, oh, well, we'll just put a mother of pearl dial, sprinkle some diamonds on it, and here's your watch. So, you know, we're I don't know how we can do it more actively. And obviously Kathleen is my boss, if you will, is a woman. But we're trying to find ways though to make this something that's appealing to both sexes. And it's a little difficult, but I think we're getting there. And the internet is a big part of that. Social media is a big part of that. You know, we wouldn't even exist at the level we do if we didn't have social media. And I think, you know, the sites like Hodinkee, A Blog to Watch, Revolution site, you know, the magazines, you know, they've all brought this community together, raised the collective knowledge level to a point that I don't think we ever saw before. But with that, then I think there's a desire for people to kind of get together and share that in person. And obviously we've hit a huge speed bump thanks to COVID-19. But I think since we've had a taste of that, you know, we're going to find a way to keep that going.
I mean, I think when so many relationships in the watch world were born from the internet, like so many people I speak to and got friendly with, it started on the internet, and Red Bar was an extension of that. And
it was.
I think it's like we have to retreat a little bit, regroup, so we can go back out again.
I think maybe we'll appreciate it more.
Yeah, I think we can definitely continue to survive. It's not like because we can't meet in person, it's not going to work anymore. I think we'll continue to survive and thrive as a community online because it's how we started.
Well, you're right. We started this way, but we're just lucky we have this technology.
Yeah, true. Yeah, very true. So as somebody who obviously deals with the brands, the big brands a lot, you kind of, like I said earlier, as a Red Bar, I see it as a connection between the brands, and you're kind of connecting the brands and the enthusiasts. And as someone, obviously, I work in the industry, and I can see sometimes how a real lack of flexibility from the brands, and the kind of we do things the Swiss way. How would you like to see the watch industry in terms of manufacturing and products change to fully embrace the enthusiast community? Because obviously you're in touch with the enthusiast community, and they're catering mainly to the larger general public. How do you think they can meet in the middle someplace that would improve? I mean, in my mind, it's always we need to change more people into enthusiasts.
I think they're finding that now. And a lot of that is, it's not something, you know, I can take any credit for through Red Bar or anything else. I think a lot of it is technology being a great equalizer, if you will. It's also, I think they're realizing now that selling luxury for the sake of luxury doesn't resonate like it used to. And you know, the one thing you have to remember with the Swiss watch industry, the Swiss is, you know, they're like 5 years behind everybody else when it comes to embracing change. And, you know, in some respects, that's bad. In other respects, I think it's a quality that serves them well. I mean, so much of what they do is based on tradition. But, you know, things keep moving exponentially faster and faster. You look at how long did it take them to develop an internet presence? You know, and by the time they got that, you know, how long then did it take for them to realize that, you know, social media was a thing, you know, that you should engage in, and that there are right ways to do it and wrong ways to do it. By the time they did that, you know, well, what about e-commerce? You know, how about selling direct? How does all that, you know, and so they were always sort of behind the curve of, say, the general industry, if you will, but they do catch up. And I think now that learning curve is accelerating for them by necessity.
and not even with
what's happening with COVID, which, you know, again, has certainly sped the plow in terms of e-commerce. But I think just realizing that, you know, today when somebody walks into your boutique with ripped jeans and a t-shirt, that doesn't mean they can't afford to buy your entire store. You know, that you have to kind of readjust how you're selling and who you're selling to, and that you can't just sell it on the merits of luxury. You have to offer something else. And it's not necessarily functionality, because if you want to tell the time, let's be honest, everyone carries a cell phone. That's the 21st century pocket watch. Nobody needs a watch anymore. So how do you sell that to somebody who's smart enough to know that they don't need it? And so you're selling a story, you're selling a lifestyle. And it's got to be something that I think has real resonance. You know, if you're starting to make shit up, or you're using ambassadors, influencers, you know, people see right through that these days.
They still do it. They still try it.
Of course they still try it. And that's because they can't help themselves.
Yeah. I've been just nodding along here as you talk, Adam. I've been nodding because I was being instructed by my editor not to say any, do any little yeah, yeah, and listening noises. So I'm just nodding,
yeah,
okay?
I do that all the time. the time. I get yelled at.
Both of you, shut up, both of you, okay?
I'm still here.
I'm the only one editing this shit.
All right, there you go. That's my take on
it. It's like Morse code when I go through and I look at the files later on to edit all the bits where you all, it's just like blip, 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 blip. And that's all the times Rob said yeah in about a 10-second thing.
Did you notice I haven't been saying it this morning? I've been listening.
Yeah,
I'm listening
so
carefully.
Impressed. Unfortunately, you've ruined it now.
How many ums have I put in? I usually do a lot of ums.
I don't think it matters because all your words run so kind of closely together. I don't think it matters.
You can't even tell.
So what you're saying is that the Swiss watch industry seems to be moving in the right direction anyway. Is that what you're saying? I think that's true a little bit, actually.
I think in general, I've never seen that. Even with, I'll be honest, it was, you know, this has been a very difficult week for us here in the United States. You know, not only are we, you know, dealing with the virus and a very divided country politically, but, you know, with the death of George Floyd, I'm just call it what it is, murder. I forced myself to watch that. I forced myself to watch that video. It was a very painful thing to watch, not only as a human being, but as a parent, knowing that he has, you know, a mother and what have you. But so obviously we've been, you know, really, I think, grappling with our legacy of racism and you know, police brutality and all of that stuff. And we're looking too now to see like the brands that support this, or the brands that are kind of try and share a little bit of what they feel about this. And it's interesting because in years past, you wouldn't have heard a peep out of any brand, not even just the luxury industry. I think most brands just would have said, you know, this isn't about us. We're just here to make money. And I saw a lot of watch brands posting and engaging the community in a way that, look, talk is cheap. You know, it comes down to action. But even the simple, you know, gesture of posting a black square, and everybody, a lot of people have a problem with virtue signaling. But if that's the least you can do, why not do that at least? And we saw the brands that did that. We saw the brands that even took it a step further and said, we're going to donate money. We're going to make ourselves more aware. And look, I know for a fact that internally many of these brands have a lot of issues with you know, sexism, racism, you know, all the things that frankly as a world we're dealing with. But it's interesting to see that they actually realized, holy shit, you know, we have a responsibility to say something.
We have a voice.
And that would not have happened before. I'm not, you know, nobody's off the hook here. And yes, there's still businesses that employ people, and that's fine too. But to see that was interesting. You know, I can call out brands Zenith, Julian Tenore, the CEO, IWC, Christoph Granger. You know, they all kind of went a little bit beyond what I had expected, and that was nice to see.
Yeah, that is always good, actually. That's a good sign. I think it's just listening. They're listening to people, and that's important.
But all what you've said about the whole social thing, it's important for the industry as well, and what Alex has brought up about what we can do to make it better. I mean, I think, you know, most of the brands are sort of struggling through. They're sort of feeling their way. As you said, the Swiss are a bit are very conservative. I lived there for 20 years. They're very conservative.
You know them. Yeah, I don't have to tell you anything.
I got a Swiss passport. I mean, I could pretend I'm Swiss. But yeah, it, from where we are, and from, it's changed a lot, obviously, in the last even 10 years, but 20 years, it's changed massively. But this, so Red Bar's pretty much gone global, right? I mean, how many chapters are there now?
I think we're up to 64, I want to say. I mean, we're in pretty much every major city in the United States and Europe, South America, not so much. We're trying to get some more going down there, Central America. The only continent we're not on is Antarctica. So
no penguins. I'm interested.
Well, you know, I've reached out to McMurdo Base, see if anybody there has watches that they just want to get together and hang out. And then I can say, you know, we've got them all.
Yeah. But, I
don't know. Nobody's, they haven't gotten back to me. So I think it just takes a while down there. You know, the the cold temperatures slow the electrons or something.
Rob, have you ever been to a Red Bar event?
No, I haven't. Not knowingly, anyway. Not sober.
What do you mean not knowingly?
Not sober.
Like,
Well, look, I'm in
Perth. Not that I remember. Okay. I've had a few that I really don't remember. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm not out of the realm of possibility.
And I know there's guys in Melbourne. I don't know about Sydney. There must be something in Sydney as well.
Actually, we don't. We've had a few false starts there. So Melbourne is our main chapter, but we will be getting Sydney online pretty soon.
I've had a few conversations with the guy with Ernie in Melbourne, but never met him. I don't think.
He is a very fit fellow.
Yeah, exactly.
He really depresses me with his
I hate it.
His Instagram. But he has these huge steaks every night. I think he must hate vegans or vegetarians.
He always posts
like a steak every night in his Instagram stories, like having another Wagyu A5 steak or something like that every night.
Yeah, he definitely treats himself right.
Well, the problem is here in Perth. I mean, it's one of the most isolated cities in the world, which recently has been a big advantage for us. But but for everything else, it's been like, and we're not 5 years behind like the Swiss, we're like 40 years behind. But it's still that it's kind of I've gone from living in Switzerland, working in Geneva for years and years and years, and being invited and going to every single event under the sun for every different brand and stuff to being in Perth, where it's really up to me to organize stuff, which I have been trying to do a little bit. There's a few local guys that, it's a decent sized town, Perth. There's a couple of million people, but, it's just nothing. It's just going from, it's night and day, basically, between Switzerland and here, which is why, maybe I should start. I have to get another local chapter.
Yeah, it's Red Bar Perth. Give me a holler. We'll get you.
I will. Okay, we'll do that.
Send you the kit.
Brilliant.
Just an email that says, have fun. Here's a logo. No
assets. I can relate. I can relate. I think I can. If there's any more than two rules, I'm pretty sure yeah. I can manage that.
No, that's too structured for us, Rob. That's too structured.
I think we have a file and somewhere on the Dropbox that it's like 14. We wanted to be professional and really sit down and brainstorm this and I think we did it and then it's just collecting dust. I don't think we ever looked at it again. After this, as a matter of fact, I'm going to get off and look and see if I can.
You should. That. Exactly. That's a good excuse. We've talked
probably,
about it.
Yes, I should probably look that up. I think there's more than 2 weeks.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I know there's a bit of a community over east in Sydney and Melbourne. There's a good bunch of guys, basically. And Alex has done really well in Melbourne with Fifth Wrist, which is like a you can probably explain it better than me, Alex, but it's like a review.
I don't know if I can.
A self-reviewing. It's a website.
I've seen it. I've read it.
Yeah, and it's guys doing their own reviews, and it's like proper, honest, brutal reviews of good and bad of watches, but like by the owner, not by PR departments, which is kind of nice.
Well, that's the problem, I think, with journalism.
I also
work with Revolution magazine, and so it's I think people always criticize the reviews, say, oh, well, nobody says anything bad. You don't want to piss off the brands, and I would say, there is a fine line that we have to walk in the sense that if you really, I liken them to jealous prom dates, so you don't want to insult them too much, and then they, take the limo and, leave you on the curb and, you have to walk home, that sort of thing. And also at the end of the day, though, we're talking about watches. We're not reporting, from the front lines of Syria and Aleppo. We're not, putting people on the moon. Every watch today is a good watch for the most part. So what are you criticizing? Timekeeping for the most part is going to be perfectly acceptable. Build quality, well, then you look at the price point. I think that's where the criticism can come in, and you can say, well, look, this watch does this and this, but at this price point, maybe this is a better value, that's a better value. But once you start getting into value, the notion of value in a luxury business is a very fraught one. I think that's I was talking to somebody the other day, and we're talking about a watch. It was a $2,800 watch, and sort of saying, "Wow, it's a great value. It's a great price point. It's very accessible." And I had to sort of slap both of us out of the moment and say, $3,000 still we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. No matter who you are, for the most part, that's a lot of money. And just you can afford that, but I think we still have to respect that these are expensive things. So it's, for me, it's always been a, I'm not an arbiter of taste. I can't tell you that a watch is ugly unless it's an Invicta.
No one is.
because you know, one man's treasure is another man's trash. You know, I have watches that I'm sure plenty of people don't like and think are ugly, and wow, you were stupid for buying it, but there are just as many people who are going to say, no, you're an idiot, it's a great watch, and it's beautiful, and I wish I had it. So I don't know where we draw that line, but that's why I like the idea of the people who put their money where their mouth is. You know, I voted with my wallet. This is the watch. I have to live with it. Now, you know, I think it's a good looking watch because I bought it. But now that I've had it for a while, is there buyer's remorse? Did I overpay? Is something that I really liked about it now kind of grating on me? And, you know, you can't really do that as a reviewer because we have the watch for, you know, a week. Maybe sometimes you just get to handle it, you know, at a press event and then you got to give it back. So there's a place for that. And it's nice that you guys are doing that.
Well, that's why, and I've always said, and which made me a terrible salesman when I was selling watches. Is
that these watches are shit.
Well, I always said that other people's opinions are overrated. You know, other people's opinions are overrated. You get what you like, obviously. I mean, yeah, people say that in different ways. You know, lots of people say that, but I mean, I was saying this when I was trying to sell $200,000 Richard Mills, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But kind of, yeah, you know, it's all about. Care. And here I am.
Here you are.
I've gone from, yeah, well, you know, but, you know, a lot more comfortable where I am,
yes,
selling my crappy little watches and straps and stuff rather than selling a lot of Richard Mills, which was instead of BS, I won't say BS, but there's a lot of fluff, you know, in Geneva for Mills.
Yeah, what Adam said earlier about people can spot bullshit a lot more now. And I feel like I'm constantly on edge looking for bullshit. Like, there was something I read earlier on today, and I just went on a kind of tirade in the house, kind of shouting at my cats for about half an hour. Like, this is told. This is a crock of shit. Like, what the fuck is, like, this is just absolute bollocks. But I think I have to give more people within the community credit for being able to spot this stuff as well. And I think the more authentic stuff that's out there, like our podcast, like Authentically Shit, and like the reviews that people do where they're reviewing their own watches, I think it helps other people see the authenticity that is out there. So
it definitely does. It definitely does. I don't know. I just say buy what you like, wear what you buy, unless it's an Invicta. And, you know, at the end, you're the one who has to wear the watch. You're the one who's looking at it, telling time with it. If it makes you happy, I guess it's okay. You know, would I like to see it? And if I'm being perfectly honest, you know, part of my beef with Invicta, and it can apply to other brands too, but when I see that people have spent all this money, and I think to myself that if this is a hobby you really want to get into and you want to enjoy for what I consider to be the right reasons, I see all this money you've spent that you could have been building a collection in a direction that would make you happier in the long run. And so that's where I want people to spend money. And then it just depends on how much money you have. You know, so maybe your collection is not going to be this grand with your Richard Mills and your Pateks and all of that stuff. But, you know, maybe you're going to be happy with Seikos and Casios. But then get the ones that I think make sense and make you happy. And that's kind of where I am at with it. I can't afford anything nowadays. The next watch I'm going to get is the Hamilton PSR. I love that. Love that watch.
Do you not think they should have had, like, an advancement in the technology, though? Like, they should have had something where it can be on all the time. You don't have to press the button anymore. Is it? I thought there's still a button.
No, that's what they did. So it's a dual layer transmissive display. So all the time, very dimly, you can read the time digitally. It's there. But then at night,
oh my god, I'm the worst Swatch Group employee ever.
You push the button, and then it lights up. But the way it lights up using OLED, not regular LED, but it's still the digit dot display that the first one had. And if you look at the segments on the original, and I have one of the originals, they're not the solid LCD seg. Each seg, a little bar, if you will, in the digit is actually comprised of a bunch of dots. So it almost looks like a dot matrix, even though it's not. And they replicated that exactly. So it does. So what it doesn't do, and this is interesting, and they had this technology back then. I have a calculator watch, and they just call it calculator watch. There's no name. It's just the Pulsar calculator. It actually has a little mercury switch in it. So when you flick it up at your face, and you kind of have to really make a point of flicking it, it'll turn on. sort of like the way your Apple Watch does that now. So it would have been interesting if it had that at least, and then you didn't have to press the button to light it up, but I don't care. I can't afford anything else. So so I'll do that. But even if you look at to what you were saying about people, you know, having their own opinions and writing their own stuff up, one guy that I love is Vasu, and he's a Red Bar New York guy, and he's a New York watch guy on an NYC watch guy on Instagram. And what I love is that his collection is just scary good. You know, I mean, it's the best of the best. And whether it's Independence, whether it's Patek and Audemars, and he owns Richard Mille, and yet he regularly drags Richard Mille for just all their, you know, fluff bullshit that they do and their pricing and the fact that you can't buy one. You've got to go to like 47th Street, you know, and whatever. And he cracks me up because he just gives you the straight dope. And I guarantee you, if he went out and spent like $100,000 on a watch and it sucked, he would tell you. And he would tell you very publicly. And yeah, and we need people like that. But he's got the fuck you money to do it. See, I don't, so I can't.
Remember, he's the guy that got. He's got Debatoons and stuff, right? I think I remember.
Oh, yeah, he's got the Stradivarius added that to his collection. I mean, he bought the Groenfeld only watch.
All right. How beautiful.
Yeah, I was there, too. I didn't know that was him. I definitely would have done something to mark the occasion. But
I'm just looking at it. Is that Philip Dufour his?
No, he does not. Yeah, he doesn't have simplicity.
Wow. He's got some cool stuff there. Yeah.
Gary has one of those. Gary Getz.
Gary Getz. I know Gary, yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff too.
Yeah, Gary G. He writes with Quill and Pad.
Oh, Gary G. Yep. That was the guy you talked about recently, Rob, right?
Whatever Gary wants, Gary Getz.
Gary Getz.
He doesn't think that's so funny anymore. I don't know why. I keep saying that. He's a good guy to drink with, though.
Yeah, I've done that a few times. Yeah,
he's funny. He's another example of a guy I love to hate. Because he's so nice, he's so knowledgeable, he's so enthusiastic, and yet, God damn you and your fucking watches. Like, you wish they were an asshole. You're like, look, I could have a collection like that, I could have that money, but then I'd be an asshole like him. I don't want it. And then you're like, actually, he's a lot nicer than you are. Oh, shit. You know, that's what I don't like.
That's such a good point. Okay, Adam, what I want you to do is, I want you to
remember. I'm not wearing pants. But go on.
Imagine
whatever you want.
I want you to kind of promote Red Bar, but I want you to tell me. I want you to promote it solely to me, so to like a borderline functioning alcoholic from Scotland. I want you to tell me about like the most like fucked up Red Bar event, night out, watch thing you went to. And like, I don't want you to hold anything back. So whatever the fuck, like, I want it to be as debauched as fuck. If afterwards you can tell me like, okay, now you need to edit out that bit about the heroin or the go or whatever. Like, I want the, but it has to be good. Okay, that's all I ask.
Okay, well, it in a lot of this particular one, I think centered around the bathroom, and I can't name names, but these, you know, are bathrooms for single people, but there was more than one person in them. And then at one point there was an issue because a bag, a very small bag, a very small see-through bag, cellophane bag that had a substance in it went missing. And you know, people wanted that. And then it involved like hands and knees in a gross bathroom, and then thinking, wait, what just happened in here before? Don't touch that. And at the same time, James Lambden took over the DJ booth and then played again and again and again on repeat the theme to Ghostbusters. So in the midst of just a lot of drinking that, in my case at least, involved expelling some of that drink to be able to drink more, it also involved other substances, other people getting together in ways that were a little strange and maybe a little too public for the situation, and then all to the soundtrack of Ghostbusters. And that was just like a regular night. It wasn't like we were throwing an event or anything. That was just...
It's a Wednesday.
It was a Wednesday. Yeah, like you call it a debauched orgy of sin. We just call it Wednesday. But that was, and that's not usually what happens. I forgot why we were all, everybody was in kind of a weird place at that
point. You're celebrating something.
I don't think so. And then it was my birthday, but it's not my birthday, but it became a joke in this bar that we go to. But at the end, we always do like our closing ceremonies. Whoever can stay till the end, I buy a round of drinks, shots.
Is there a closing ceremony? I want to do these things.
We have a closing ceremony. So if you make it to the end, however many people have made it to the end, whenever I determine is the end, it's usually pretty late because I don't want to buy that many shots. I really am kind of like watching that one person who's looks like they're going for their coat. Not, I'm like, not yet. And they're looking at me at the bar like, you want now? And now I'm like, no, wait. And then they'll leave. Like upstairs, I'm like, okay, now, let's go. But then they started doing this thing where they would just come out with like the sparklers and like the booze and Jello shots, singing happy birthday. And then every week they would do that like it was my birthday. Right. So then after all the shit, the Ghostbusters and whatever, and we're just no more drinks. And then all of a sudden the lights go down, the sparklers come out, and it's my birthday. And it wasn't my birthday, of course, again. And then we did Jello shots, Jameson, and again, then they turned up the Ghostbusters, and it was, I think the miracle is we never lost a watch. Sometimes people leave. They leave their watches, and that's why I'm always the last man standing. Even if I'm sick of this shit and I just want to go home and I hate everybody and I hate watches, you will see me with a flashlight on my hands and knees, looking under the tables, the chairs, looking behind stuff, just making sure that nobody left anything. And whatever I find, I just take home with me, and then I reach out the next day, and that's it. So
you have to stay to the very end. You have to stay, right?
Yes. I've been out very late on Wednesday nights. And what I hate the most is then if we've scheduled meetings like Thursday morning and everybody, you know, and I've literally been at like Richemont's offices, like, you know, talking to like, you know, the president of Panerai, and it's like, Adam, why do you look like? I'm like, dude, it's Wednesday night. Like, oh,
it was my birthday last night.
My birthday, bitch. Like, they're always like, oh shit, that's right. Yes, we were really drunk and stupid last night. Of course.
I have to ask, Adam, have you? That sounds like a night with Anish at the Java. You've been the Java Club, right, underneath the Kempinski in Geneva.
Okay, so you want to talk about that? I actually got so drunk that I don't remember how I got back to the hotel. The president, the Wilson.
That's not far.
And then that next morning, I had to get up to do an early event with Mont Blanc. I think this was 2 years ago. So I got out there early to do this thing. And then I remember running. He showed up, by the way, like three-piece suit, camera crew. Looked like he slept 8 hours, got up, did a leisurely 5K, had a continental breakfast, read the Times. You know, I was like, I looked like shit. And I was still so drunk. Hungover that I was actually still a little drunk, and I remember I said hi to Christian Hagen, and he was like, whoa, because my breath was like 100 proof, and the look on his face, and he looked at me, I'm like, what? And he's like, you're not playing this off at all. And you know what they had us doing? They had us racing BMWs. This was at the introduction of the new Time Walker collection on a close part of the airport. And here's the thing: when the first group went out, then they and I was in the second group, they came around with like wine, beer, and champagne. And I was I'm like, well, I can hair the dog, that'll probably help with the hangover. So I had like 3 glasses of champagne, and then I got in a car to, you know, drive around this test loop.
Right. Hungover, right, okay.
Still drunk. And I'm like, does somebody need my driver's license? Do you need to? Nope. I didn't sign anything. I'm like, I could get used to this. But that was Anish's fault. And of course, he had the center table a little raised up. We had two.
Yeah, that's the one on the little podium thing where he dives over the bars around the outside. He dives over the rail on top of you when you walk into the club. Yeah, yeah, with the sparklers and the Grey Goose vodka. Yeah, okay.
The sparklers, the vodka. Then they had the colored vodka shots.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, how wrong were those? Yeah, that was. One of those, I lost a watch. I swapped a watch with someone when I had a Richard Mill on, and I ended up going home. Okay. But and I had, I'm not sure if it was Anish or his friend Leon or one of their, I had some vintage Rolex, which was probably 70, 80 grand. It was a nice watch when I got back to my hotel, but I didn't know where my RM11 carbon was. No clue. No clue.
I'll take it.
I mean, yeah. And so I said, okay, I'm pretty sure it was one of Anish's got Anish himself or one of his mates and stuff like that. Someone there's got it because I remember. Yeah, so I forgot about it. But then by about, I went into the boutique the next day and I was working in there and I was running that one in the Kempinski and I started ringing around at about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, just making, seeing where the watch would be, you know, kind of thing. And then I was online, I saw it on a, I don't think it was Insta, but something, or Instagram or some blog where I saw it, a photo of it on someone's wrist. I thought, oh, that's cool. I know where it is at least, or who's got it, I think so. And then the next day, the guy rocked in with it. I'd been without this thing. I was only a couple hundred grand, but still, it was sort of my responsibility and I was supposed to sort of give it out, but it was, someone got some good photo ops out of it and it was, but yeah, that was it. That was my most memorable sort of,
That's what he does. Though. He kind of takes over that place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good fun though. All good. Good.
You don't wind up paying for any drinks. I mean, cause
no, exactly. So. Oh no, you're not.
I always appreciate that guy can party though. Like
for a little guy, he can put it away. My goodness.
Okay. So I was going to say he's not a large fellow.
No.
And, man, I don't know what he does with it. No. He looked, if anything, he looked even better the next
day. Yeah. Oh yeah. You see him on Instagram Live, and he'll just keep he'll go through a bottle, and he's fine. We're going to get him on here in the podcast in a few weeks' time, actually.
Yeah,
I have been talking to him. Yeah, it'll be
that
fun.
Cat can. He's got stories, man.
You can party. Yeah, yeah.
I feel really disappointed now. The Red Bar events I've gone to, and I can remember them all, and there was no like illegal substances or. I mean, can you speak to Ernie and maybe get him to like raise the
bar, raise the Red Bar?
He's so healthy.
That's a problem.
I don't know.
You need a yin to his yang. You need like some meth addict to kind of offset that.
You'd really need somebody out there to, because he's way too healthy. I'm gonna shoot him. As funny, I have to reach out to him for something. And I'm gonna say, look, man, when we get this shit going again, like I just want you to coke the fuck out of this thing. Can you do that for me? As a favor.
Oh my goodness.
We're not talking heroin. We're not talking needles. I don't need you cooking anything up. Let's just coke that shit up a little, all right? I'm not going to do that because that's.
Oh, you're not.
Because that's against the law.
Yeah, Adam.
No, that get it. That's against the law.
Oh yeah, wait a minute.
Wink, wink. Yeah.
Wink into the camera.
Yeah. No, well, right, because I know you guys are looking at me. I didn't put tape over the camera. I'm going to do that. Because this is going to wind up on YouTube. I know it. I did that one time. I was doing a Zoom with a brand, and they had the cameras on. A lot of other people watching as they're doing their presentation, showing us. And I had to get up to get something. And of course, you know, when I got up and the camera, no pants. And I caught some shit for that. So.
I thought you were going to say fully aroused. That's what I thought you were going to say. Which would have been so much.
It was. I can't tell you. I can't tell you the brand, but I mean, it was definitely an arousing selection of timepieces. So, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I've said too much.
No, that's okay.
Not enough.
It'll go no further than our podcast.
So, is Rob kind of setting
you up
for a fail here? No, I'm going to say, as Rob told you, we need a Instagram recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Actually, I already brought him up. I don't know how. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people follow him anyway. But I really just love NYC watch guy Asu. I'm not a huge like because it's stuff that I don't play with in terms of just my own personal life. So it's nice to see the cat who has the watches, but he's not presenting it as luxury porn. And you know who those guys are, you know, who are showing off, flossing a little bit, maybe trying to pretend to be humble. This guy just has great watches. He knows it's stupid, but whatever. And he's very straightforward. And I just love it. Like, that's a cat I like. In the sense that he's humble and he's humble enough, shall we say. And he has, you know, he's got an opinion. He's not worried about pissing a brand off. He's not worried about, is he saying the right thing or not? And he's just got great taste. But he's just talking about the watch. You know, other people will really try to present it as part of their just really awesome lifestyle. And I'm not here for that shit, dude. You know, let me see the watch. I don't need to see your fancy car. I don't need to see you take a picture and I can see you're driving a Porsche or blah, 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 and all that crap in your fashion, unless you're Wei. The only people I'll deal with the fashion shit, Waco, you know, my friend Matt Rannick, that's WM Brown Project, because these cats, you know, they eat, sleep, and breathe that fashion. And for them, it's just part of their life. They're not showing off. They just love that crap. I wear t-shirts and flip-flops. So it's a closed book to me, but I like looking at the cats that do it right. So that I'm down with.
That's like, who's the guy, Wei's mate, that there's a British guy in London that he's always got a three-piece suit on. I've met him, but...
Nick Fulks.
Nick Fulks. Yeah.
Oh, God. That he operates on a whole other fucking level. That guy's like from another planet. He's like from the planet fashion and like the galaxy. Like, I mean, he's from another world. His son is like into that shit too. He's actually really funny.
He's a nice guy. He's a funny guy. He's.
He was heckling me in Dubai. I was doing a panel discussion and the questions, he was heckling me. And it was funny because everybody's sitting together and it's Dubai and everyone, you know, you don't want to get, say the wrong thing and you wind up in Dubai prison on the wrong side of a cattle prod or something. And he's like leaning across like three seats with like a white linen suit and like jewelry and sunglasses and just looking like he owned the place. And it was awesome. And I'm like, you know, you, sir, can heckle me and I will bend over and take it like a little bitch because... You, sir, are awesome.
Yeah, he certainly looks like an interesting chap. Yeah.
Yeah, and you could be mistaken. I think sometimes if you follow his stuff, I think maybe he's a little high on his own supply, but he's not at all. Again, he's someone who really just loves that. And then as a sort of a scholar, you know, he's written several very definitive books on horology. He's the brains and he's the beauties. So... Like Wei.
I think he looks too eccentric to be an asshole.
Yeah, eccentric is a good way, I think, to put it. But I remember thinking, like, I'm not going to like this guy. He's got nothing to say to me. And then the first time I met him, I was like, you know what? Shit, this cat, it's the real fucking deal. I'll never be able to dress like him, but shit.
Thank God I cannot imagine you dressed in the same fucking hell.
No. Every time I put a suit on, it's like, will the defendant please rise? Like, that's you. Stand up. Oh, yes, Your Honor. Like, I look like a criminal. Anytime I put a suit on, it's like my lawyer bought it so I'd be more sympathetic to the jury. I don't look comfortable in them. I sweat too much. My body shape is all wrong. I'm fat in the wrong places and skinny in the wrong places. It's beyond dad bod. It's like, I don't know. It's not good. I thought I'd lose weight. Because, you know, my wife's not letting me drink and she's making me eat right. And no. So I'm like, well, can I start drinking again? Like, where's the bacon? It sucks.
That's one really good thing about working for yourself. I mean, I spent years and years dressed up in really nice suits and ties and all the gear. But then I'm just so nice. Yeah, I had to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Some of these guys make it look so easy. Like Wei is a perfect example. I don't know how he does it.
I'm glad you asked that. I was just going to get underway. I mean, how's it working with him? He's a funny guy as well from my few interactions.
No, he's fucking hilarious. What you see with him is what you get exactly. And I think what I love the most about him, and he was in town for our global meetup. You know, I mean, he's too big to come just for our global. He was there for other shit too. But, you know, he was hanging out with people at some of the parties we threw. And you know, Kai, and I could hear people like, oh shit, there's Wei Koh. Like, I want to say something. I don't, you know, like they were awestruck until you talk to him. And he's the guy who will talk to everyone. He will take your phone from you and let's get a selfie together. There's no pretense. You know, his enthusiasm is it's hard even, I think, for him to contain it.
He is very enthusiastic. He is.
Again, he could be an asshole. And then, you know, well, there you go. He's a fucking asshole. So fuck this guy. And he's somebody who's really been speaking out a lot about, you know, all the events going on in the U.S. right now and really making it personal for him. And I love that. You know, here's a guy with a magazine, two magazines. There's something Michael Jordan said years ago, and that's when I decided I didn't like Michael Jordan. And he was asked about politics, and he wasn't speaking out about some events and stuff. And he said, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too. And what he was saying in essence is that business is business. So why am I going to alienate a whole bunch of people who are going to put money in my pockets just because I speak out on an issue? And of course, now he's donating, I think, $100 million to, you know, racial equality, justice, or whatever. So that's great that he's doing that now. But that's something I always remembered. And I always thought to myself, I don't ever want to be that guy. You know, you got to stand for something, and money is money. And, you know, and so here's a guy who really, if he said that, you'd understand it. It's a publication. You know, I need people to subscribe and what have you. And he's actively telling people, you don't deserve to read my magazines. I don't want your money. He literally wrote that. And so I don't know how you don't respect that. So I have so much respect for him. And he's a great writer.
Oh, exactly. He's the only writer that I really like reading much in Revolution. Not because I've met him and talked to him, but yeah, he's opinionated and he says what he thinks. And
we need more opinionated people, I think. It pains me though when I, because I remember when the first couple of times I saw Wei, I'm all about keeping it real. The first couple of times I saw him or saw videos of him, I think I at least said a couple of times to people, I would never tire of punching him in the face. That's what I said.
And he would have loved it if you had like posted that somewhere. Like when he was getting picked on by the Hodonki guy or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, he would. Yeah, he did love that.
He loves it.
But it wasn't. I remember I saw some. Like he was doing an interview at Basel with Basel World with Patek, and he was interviewing some lady, and she was showing them the watches. And he had the watch in his hand as he was looking at it, and in his other hand he had a camera phone, and he was just like taking pictures like right in the woman's face like the entire time. And I was just like, I have no idea how this woman has not just like hit him over the head with a chair already. But I'm all about being flexible with my opinions. And yeah, like there's a passion there. Once I saw the video with him and Goldberger. But he was obviously just so in love with someone else who was being passionate about something that he was also passionate about. I was like, oh God, this pains me, but actually he's kind of growing on me.
I think it's very easy to see how a lot of these people can be kind of punchable or hateable on some level. I got people who don't like me. They've just said
I don't like you.
Shit and I'm full of crap. Yeah, well, there we go. And I think, honestly, if you're doing you, there are going to be people who don't like your shit. But yeah. I think if who you are ultimately, though, is good, even the people who hate your shit, if they get a chance, they're going to come around and be like, hey, wait a second, you're actually okay. And he's that guy.
Because it's authentic. That's it. And that's what's really important, if you're authentic.
Yeah, but he's lucky that he's also worked hard enough to get to a position where, you know, he can have his opinions. Like, it's way. You know, I can't get away. I can't get away with that shit. So he can get away with that. I think you got to get work your way up to that point. But he also knows everybody. Like when he's interviewing somebody, you're like, does he really know? Like, why are they acting like best friends? And it turns out, like, yeah, they probably are best friends. He probably like saved him in the war. There was probably some shit you don't know that's going on. They pulled him out of a burning plane, and then they went and drank Negronis together and laughed about it afterward. So he is that guy. Always amazed. Every person that we've met, we've done some interviews together, wherever we've been traveling, like, and he sits down and I'm like, oh shit, that's so and so. And then all the two of them are like reminiscing. I'm like, what the fuck? How do you know this guy? You know everybody. So he's one of those people. Ugh. One day I'll be that person, but I'll be like really old. Smelly. I'm already old. Remember, I'm 48.
Adam, what are you doing now with Revolution then? Do you just do a column or something? Do you organize their American stuff? I mean, you do the whole magazine.
I was the editor in chief for the US, so that was sort of the whole magazine. And then it was getting to be a little much between Red Bar doing the magazine, all the traveling that was involved for both, which obviously we don't have to worry about now. And so we started talking about bringing somebody else on board to handle the editor-in-chief duty. So we have Stephen Watson now, who's formerly of like everything. This cat's written for a zillion magazines, that we poached him from Watch Journal, the most recent one, a wonderful guy. I went and did the pitch, like begged him, like, come on, man, you got to do this. So I am now the editor at large, which basically means I get to do whatever the fuck I want. But also I'm involved in the course, when we planned all this stuff together, it was that I would handle a lot of the digital engagement, all of the events and stuff like that, you know, still put my two cents into the magazine. And then there are actually a couple of brick and mortar initiatives that we're working on. So I was going to focus on that stuff. And then, of course, once we got all the ducks in a row and I handed off the duties for the latest issue, installed myself to do this other stuff, and then basically the world set itself on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait, well, fuck. So everything that I was set up to do, I now can't do. So now I'm doing, you know, the fireside chats. I've got some articles coming out, obviously, in the next magazine. And then we're still looking for ways to basically just continue to engage people that's outside of the bounds of the magazine. And then in Singapore, they've been doing a lot recently to really bump up the quality and the consistency for the online portion. Because Revolution does have a great website, but as a primarily print publication, you know, when the magazine comes out, you kind of want that content to be exclusive for a little bit. Otherwise, people are like, well, what the fuck am I paying for the magazine for? So a lot of the long form cool stuff will be there. It all trickles down eventually, but we have to keep that content still fresh and rotating on the site too. And then there's a big commercial aspect too. You know, just like Hodinkee and everybody else, you know, we're also a retailer on some level. And again, like with Hodinkee, there's a firewall between both sides of that. I know the optics aren't great for a lot of people, but at the end of the day, you know, this is how you make it a business.
Mm.
So it's going well. But I mean, yeah, the magazine itself, I mean, the only reason I said yes to him initially was that it, to me, is kind of the best print magazine out there in terms of the quality of the writing, in terms of the production quality, the photography. It's just really like there's nothing else like it. And it's a lot of that is a reflection of him. You know, Jack Forster, as a matter of fact, when I first met Jack, he was the U.S. editor-in-chief for Revolution. So I followed in his footsteps, but I definitely fucked up more than he did. So
at least you admit it, though.
that guy is, you know, he is like scary smart, Jack.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's really creepy. Yeah,
but remember, it's amazing how it's been since the magazine first came out. Though I remember it was like such a big thing. It was awesome when I was in Switzerland. Obviously,
I think it actually toned there. Down a little bit. The
I did. Cells yes. Part. Yeah. Exactly.
I used to really enjoy those spreads in that magazine. And
what do you mean the sexy parts? What
that was,
are you
maybe
about?
That was maybe that was something I could bring back. That's you know, but I was not. Able.
You failed.
I didn't quite. Yeah, I didn't get.
They used to have centerfolds or something. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. For the industry, yes. Yeah, for our standards, yes.
Actually, yeah. When it looked, I remember when we had Mo Coppoletta on, and I was looking for some photographs of Mo, and there was one where he did a photo shoot with for Revolution, and he was trying to. It looked like he was tattooing some kind of half naked chick, and she had an AP on. And I was like, God, this is just a lot of guys who are like, we have $100,000. How can we spend this and have like a good day doing fucked up shit? That's basically the vibe I got from that. And I was like, I can applaud that. I can get behind that kind of thing.
No, it was very artistically.
Yeah, of course.
That's
it was
always the excuse for these kind of things. It's artistic.
It's art. It's art. But I'm always impressed with the work that they put into that magazine. Even just my wife's a graphic designer in a previous life. And I remember the first time I brought a copy of the magazine home, and, you know, she doesn't give a rat's ass about watches, but she was like, oh my God, the quality of the stock they use. This must be the blah, 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 blah. I'm like, all right, I'm not listening to you anymore because I don't care. You're speaking another language. She's like, well, you should kind of care about this shit. If you're going to be the editor-in-chief. And I'm like, there are people who deal with that. But even she recognized just like, so I was like, okay, that's cool.
I do look at it when it comes in, because we get it in work because some of our brands advertise in it. So they're always kind of just laying around, because obviously no one at work is into watches. I'm like, can I have one of these? And people are like, what even is it? I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take this. But yeah, takes you back to like a different era of publication, and it definitely has a feel feel of way about it. It's creepy. It sounds fucking weird, actually.
It does feel of way around it. But I was going to say the same thing. I'm glad you said it, so I don't have to feel weird about saying it.
Sound weird, yeah. It's all feel weird.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, that was a very long Instagram recommendation. Okay, Rob, who's your Instagram recommendation?
No.
That's a new record.
I totally 40 forgot. Minutes.
No, I want to give... I want to give Alex more work with more editing. I've got something else I wanted to ask a question about before I give my recommendation.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm really curious, Adam, about, I've never been to New York. I've been to LA. I've been to the West Coast and Texas and stuff, but I've really wanted to go to New York. And I don't know if Alex has, but it's kind of one of those things where you see so many movies about New York and stuff and read books and stuff. I've lived in London, I've been to Paris a lot, but New York is that thing where it's on everyone's bucket list, I think. I mean, right now, I guess it's a bit impossible, but...
Yeah, I doubt.
So, growing up there and stuff, I mean, I'm sure it's quite different now to when you were a kid, but how was it? I mean, for Aussies out here, I guess the majority of our listeners, I don't know where they're all from, I don't get the stats, Alex does, but, you know, it's a kind of a different world for us. I mean...
It's above your pay grade,
Alex,
Rob.
Is definitely the brains here.
Oh, of course. Of course. He is the brains.
Alex is your Kathleen, basically.
Okay, yeah, you could say that. Tell us a bit about just growing up there and stuff. I mean, it's so foreign to me, at least, being from the wheat belt in Australia.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up? What part of?
I grew up on what's considered the Upper West Side. So it's on 64th and Broadway. And if you follow my feed, you'll see every now and then I'll post a wrist shot, and in the background you'll see Lincoln Center, which is sort of our main arts complex, with where the opera is, the ballet, and so that's where I live. That's where I grew up, in that apartment. I was born. My sister and I were the first kids born in the building. Actually, I have a twin sister. That was 1972. She beat the shit out of me. Still does. And I'm glad she lives in LA actually now, so she doesn't kick my ass so much. But no, it was something. You know, back then, it's a pretty fancy neighborhood. Now, a joke. It's not just millionaires anymore; it's billionaires, and they've kind of destroyed the neighborhood. And I think in the same way that money has just destroyed every major city now. When I was growing up, if you wanted to live there, you lived there. As a matter of fact, West Side Story is actually set in that neighborhood. So before Lincoln Center went in 1966, it was all tenement row houses. And that's where, you know, like the Jets and the Sharks, you know, that was that neighborhood. And it all started to change after Lincoln Center went in. And when my building that I grew up in went in, that was sort of, you know, the first luxury structure. And so all of that neighborhood changed, basically. And I watched it change. So when I was a kid growing up, it wasn't anything special. By the time I, you know, got kicked out by my mom, it was, oh, shit, you live where? And I'm like, yeah, but we lived there before you needed money to live there. They just can't get us out. We're like embedded. I said, she's embedded like a tick. but it was crazy city, because, you know, it's so big that I think people don't really realize that you've got, you know, the Upper West Side, but then you have the Upper East Side, but then you've got Midtown, East Side, West Side, but you've got Chelsea, you've got, you know, go further downtown. Now you've got the Village, Soho. I live in Lower Manhattan.
You went far from Central Park.
I was right across the street from Central Park. I got mugged in Central Park. You know, that was where we would get mugged. Yeah, that was part of your birthright. I've been beat up in Central Park before by bigger kids, and that was just part of it. Someone stole my bike, and then somebody else came along and knocked the guy off the bike and then gave it back to me. I mean, that was the kind of shit you dealt with. And you didn't even really tell your parents. You were just like, okay, I got at least I came home with my bike. It's fine.
So was this the mugging story? Is there a mugging story, a separate incident?
Well, it was all part and parcel with it. I mean, I've mugged people too. You know, that was just... Since you got older, you
can start circle of life.
You graduate to the next level, and you pass on what you've learned. I try to teach my kids now, but it's just a different city. They don't. They're
so soft nowadays, kids.
Their heart's
really
not
are.
Into it. You know, the best part of growing up in New York was it's just that everybody was here. And when I look at all the racial strife that we're dealing with in America right now, and I think about even growing up in a very, you know, comfortable, you know, upper middle class lifestyle, as it ultimately turned out when I realized my dad wasn't as broke as he was pretending he was. that's a whole other story. But you had to confront the fact that there were people out there who were homeless. You had to confront the fact that there were people out there who were a different color than you. You had to, and when I say confronted, it was just part of your life. So the things that are so exotic and odd to other people in a city like New York, it was just Tuesday, you know? And my godfather told it to me once. And again, as an example, my godfather was a gay Catholic guy. I was raised Episcopalian. My godmother is a, you know, psychotic, you know, unmarried Jewish woman. You know, it's just, that was just normal life for us. You know, we had Desmond, the gay Irish housekeeper. We had, you know, the Signora.
This is a great sitcom as well, actually.
You know, and she didn't speak any English. And, you know, we just called her the Signora. And she would yell at me and Lauren in Spanish. And my mom hoped we'd learn to speak Spanish. And we never did. And that was just New York. But my godfather told me once, he goes, Adam, you've got New York City and then you've got America. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Obviously. And he goes, no, that what you take for granted here doesn't fly out there. That's not what people expect. So me being like so fucking gay that I had to move to San Francisco doesn't compute with these people. The fact that your mother's black and your dad's, you know, some weird Greek dude and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that to you is normal. That's not normal anywhere else. And I think as I get older, I realize how lucky I was to have that.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I'm glad that on some level my kids see that. You know, we don't live in a fancy neighborhood now. And so they've had to confront a lot of the same things I did in terms of seeing people who are homeless and actually having compassion and understanding that that could be you. That could be me. That could be any of us. Instead of seeing it as something academic, but then also like city's your playground. I don't know. It's a wonderful town. If you ever come here, I would be happy to just give you a proper mugging experience.
Absolutely.
Central Park.
That's fine.
And then I'll mug you, and then it continues on and on.
Once you're comfortable with it, you know, we'll go find someone. I'll, there you go. Go.
Brilliant.
Good. Come on, Rob. Go at that. This one's all you. This one's all you.
You can handle it. She's a 12-year-old kid. Oh, she might know karate.
Take that bike. Come on. You always wanted a huffy bike. Now it's yours. The world is your oyster.
Brilliant.
I don't know if that explained anything. It probably didn't.
Yeah, it's filled in a few blanks. Yeah. It's, I'm still curious.
It was
curious.
Easy to buy drugs. Yeah.
You need to what? Sorry?
That's still easy to buy drugs. That was a good thing. In high school, definitely was fun.
I'm trying to give it up.
But you got to go. Like, I used to go to CBGBs, you know, and that was normal. Even when I was underage, one of my friend's dad was like a lawyer for a band. And sometimes he was there. He'd sneak us in. And, you know, it was cool. Like, now it's history. But back then, that was just normal. You know, watching the Cro-Mags, getting your ass kicked in the mosh pit, and then having to explain to your parents, you didn't actually get mugged this time. You actually paid a cover charge to get your ass kicked. You know, that was fun.
Awesome. Alex, I'm still trying.
I don't know what that had to do with anything, but, you know.
I had a really great question 30 minutes ago, but it's gone. I can't remember when
it was.
Gone
now, yeah. That happens to me a lot.
It's irrelevant. Doesn't matter. Okay, well, I'll go.
That's Rob's fault.
Wasn't, just segue into my recommendation. I think he's a New York guy. He's no BS Watchmaker. Do you know him?
Yeah, he's a great guy. And his book is great, No BS Watchmaker.
I've had his book for a long time, and well, since it came out. But there's stuff being a watchmaker, I kind of, there's stuff for you sort of take with a great pinch of salt, but there's some lot of good, solid stuff there. Have you read that book, Alex? No BS Watchmaker?
No, I haven't. I know him from Instagram.
Like behind me in the shelf.
Yeah, I have it behind me here somewhere. If you could see it.
Hiding all my shit.
I think it would just depress me as to how shit a watchmaker I actually am. So I'm trying to keep positive.
Well, you might learn stuff.
I don't want to learn anything. Like I think we all know it's gone too far for me to learn anything. So
let me pull this. You see it now? I know if you have the camera.
No BS watch tips. That's right. Yeah. Now I've got to hit behind me too.
Yeah, for watch, I can't reach it. For watch enthusiasts and salespeople.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he signed it. It's signed.
Yeah, okay.
I forgot he signed it. Oh,
my
side. Yes. Great guy, though. Yeah, let's do this. Let's go. Let's read a passage.
Is this Bible? It's turning into Bible study now.
I thought it was behind me. I thought my wife hit it, but she didn't.
Here it is. Yeah.
Okay, can I just say, first of all, I do not have one of these books, but I do have a lovely book that was given to me by another watchmaker from work. And it is, it's in front of me, my microphone's on it, and it's Cocaine, History and Culture.
Oh,
that's much more interesting.
Yes.
By Armand Lim. Yeah, somebody. Anyway.
Right. Well, that's probably more interesting, to be honest. This is a good book. I don't mind this book. A guy at work bought it for me because I taught him, well, I was trying to teach him a lot of watchmaking stuff and was selling stuff. So it was kind of relevant because this, you know, what the stuff people spew out, these sales guys in boutiques, even, you know, brand boutiques or whatever, sometimes they're a bit clueless. And I was trying to get this young guy on the right track saying, you know, we need to get this book and learn the stuff, and rather than just saying whatever pops into your head, which I used to do anyway, pop. And so he bought a copy, and then he got me a copy, and it's a cool book.
It's funny, you know. I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm going to post about this, just to tell people, like, this literally, not that anybody cares about what I say, but you should, if you're interested, you need to buy this fucking book, because it's very no bullshit.
And it's not bad for salespeople, because salespeople tend to BS too much.
If you want to get into this business, it's definitely a great book for that. But
from a Swiss watchmaker's point of view, you know, I did my training at AP and stuff, and there's stuff that we wouldn't have done that way, or I kind of don't fully 100% agree with. But in general, it's quite good. Yeah, it's not bad at all. You should get one, Alex. Actually, I'll get you a copy. but that's my recommendation. No BS watchmaker or something like that. I forget how it is on. I'm following
that. That's so funny that you brought that up.
And he's in New York, right? Is he? I mean, New York's a big place, but I mean, central somewhere.
I don't know where he lives.
You may have mugged each other.
Doesn't want me to know where he lives. So, and I don't blame him for that. Yeah, he actually. Oh wait, if I read the rest of what he wrote, he goes, "And don't come looking for me. I'll find you." Forgot that he put that there. Oh, okay, that's nice.
He's gonna love. Anthony. He's gonna love that we gave a shout out for him, basically. And I don't think I did have a signed. I think my mate Harry has a signed copy, and I got this. I got one where it wasn't signed.
Yeah. Anyway. 100 plus no BS watch tips for watch enthusiasts and salespeople. And he really gets very granular in here. It's a great book.
But it's modular. You can pick it up and put it down. It's all over the place. It just goes through a lot of different stuff, but it's not in any order. It's great. I went through it every day with the guys in the yeah. Well, not a bad idea actually. Now we've spoken about him and told people to go and follow him.
Seriously, totally.
I mean, okay, guys, I can't hold anywhere. I need to go pee. Okay, you're gonna have to get on. With wine.
Off you go before you
get a whole bottle of fucking red wine here. Like, what do you want me to do? You're sitting there with a fucking scotch and you've got a Barocca and Campari. Like, I'm plowing through this bottle of wine. I need to pee. Okay. No, I'm not. We don't edit. Okay.
We don't edit this one. We don't edit stuff. No.
It was either a left or I was going to have to. I was like, can I finish this rest half pint of wine and then pee into the glass? And I was like, how do I fit the rest of the wine? So, okay.
I've come really close to doing that sometimes. But I always feel like it seems like a good idea, but it just is not going to work the way you thought it was going to work.
It's going to overflow or something. It's going to be even worse. You've got to hold it in.
No, yeah.
But, But that's not a bad idea. I'm gonna get Anthony on now. But go and follow him for a start. But I was talking. I have a young colleague who I employed when I ran a boutique here in Perth, multi brand boutique, including Omega and a bunch of other stuff. And Harry is his name. I'll if he's listening, hi Harry. He's a great guy, but had no experience whatsoever. Came in with his CV, smartly polished looking young fella. Great guy. They really, really. Really cool guy. He's still here in Perth. I haven't caught up with him for a while, but he's been gone back and done studies and stuff. But he worked for us for a year or so, and he loved it. And we had a lot of fun. Anyway, this is one of the books we talked about, went through, and now he finished the book, so now he's a watchmaker. People consider themselves, you know, as long as you've got a bit of an education, basically you're a long way ahead of a lot of salespeople or people in the industry, you know, who don't care as much, which is why Alex has done quite well, but even he comes across a lot of, is he back? A lot of,
oh my God. I heard a flush.
Oh God. I still feel so relieved. That's excellent.
I'm sorry. I'm reading the booked actually right now. And I have to tell you, so I just came across watch tip number 8. It's your watch is ungodly dirty. And then one of the headings is, what the hell is arm cheese?
Oh, don't get into that.
I want to read this passage to you. Arm cheese, my friend, is the combination of hair, cologne, perfume, sweat, body odor, lotion, and dirt. Add all of those together, and in a good amount of time, you'll get a special solidification and cocktail of arm cheese. And, you know, this is the kind of information I think people need.
Yes, that's
so
true.
I'm going to just have no clue. You know what? I'm going to stop reading now, but that was tip number 8.
And it's on page 100. That's a page 190. It's just all over the shop, which is
there's no order.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's 22 is over here, and he just there. Yeah. 75 is on 111. It's all over the place.
You got to look it up in the back index. That's where I found what you're. Yeah. But it's a cool book. It's a cool book. That's my recommendation. What about you, Alex? We've taken half an hour to get through ours.
Now that you've peed.
Yeah. You've gone to pee. You're ready to go for another hour.
Mine is Medium Watch. Who's a guy that actually has done a few reviews on the website recently. He recently reviewed Gerald Genta jumper by Retro. Really cool. Just I don't know, I like when people do stuff that's a bit different as well. I've recently trained my mum up to do all the editing on the website of the reviews. So she said to kind of give some feedback that she really liked his review and it was a new watch to her and she didn't know about retrogrades and
that one and stuff.
And she found it very easy to edit his review as well. There weren't many spelling mistakes
like mine,
so a big thank you from the watch regulator and the mother of the watch regulator. But I've been speaking to him a little bit. He's in Boston. His name's Adam. He's a really cool guy. So he's got some really cool watches actually, and he was talking to me a bit earlier on about the ones he's going to pass down to his kids and stuff. So
Oxen Junior, he's got some really eclectic stuff.
Medium Watch. I'm looking for him right now. I'm gonna follow him because this is the recommendation that I'm being given.
Good. You have to. You're obliged to. Yeah.
And he's called Adam as well. So.
What's in the name? A name rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Here we go. Watch his
He's got a jumbo. Nice.
He's got a great collection. He's got an Oxen Junior. All right. I like this guy. Oh, he's got a couple of them.
He's a really nice guy as well, which normally I don't like, but
I don't like nice people either. I know, especially nice people with nice collections. He's got an ellipse. That's actually one of my favorite Patek Philippe's. You know,
it's kind classic of an ellipse model, I think.
But God,
well, actually, we're plowing on towards 2 hours.
Oh, sorry.
Donald Trump has an ellipse, doesn't he?
What? Well, I take that back. Damn.
Yep. Yeah. Don't like him anymore.
What I was gonna say was Donald Trump's got an ellipse and a day date. So as the head of Red Bar, but he doesn't really wear a watch most of the time. If you were gonna watch one of his like total clusterfucks of a press conference, what watch would Donald Trump have to have on his wrist for you to look at him and go, maybe he's not. Like
I was a little rash in my judgment.
Yeah. What watch would you want to see Donald Trump wearing?
Invicta.
Honestly, Invicta. Maybe a Sub Aqua Noma Reserve Magnum Zeus Bolt. You know, 50.
It wouldn't be that far. Yeah, I can imagine him saying
the man is he has no taste. He's just crass. He's literally, I think Annie Leibovitz said it the best, that he's a poor person's idea of what a rich person is. Like,
yes, that's brilliant. Yeah.
You know, like that's, you know,
wonderful.
He had a cologne, you know, a branded cologne called Success. And this woman was buying it at, you know, and of course he has sells all this shit out of Trump Tower in the city. And so this woman who was visiting, you know, was buying it and asking about it. Well, you know, because he's self-made and he's so successful. I'm actually buying it for my husband and then one for my son, you know. So and then they'll be successful because they'll smell, you know. And I was literally like, that's who likes Trump. Goodness.
Yeah.
And that's who he appealed to. You know, the fact that he's a successful businessman, this guy has failed so miserably at everything he's done, but and handed hundreds of millions of dollars but he's a successful businessman, and so I'll wear his cologne. And so I feel like, there's nothing he could wear, honestly.
You know what, actually, the more I think about it, the more I'm glad he doesn't wear a watch, actually.
We don't want that, because God forbid.
We don't want that.
One thing is that he would have amazing taste in watches. It would just be so hard for me to reconcile that. So, there's nothing. But I like medium watch, though. I'd vote for him.
Yeah, for sure. That's
great.
Really cool
I'm sure
stuff.
Medium watch will appreciate you giving him a follow and
he's
buying
got some
into
great stuff in here. Jesus.
He's even got that mundane CFF.
I've been doing it wrong. Oh. Yeah, I love that. I was just looking at that. All right, I'm gonna shut up.
The idea of having guests on here was just let them go and we just sit here saying nothing and just going, just nodding, basically. But
we're just having a chat, right?
It's just guys. Hanging out in their underwear.
Partially clothed.
Yeah, hanging out. Being loose.
Yeah, various levels of arousal.
Being comfortable with our bodies.
Okay.
Okay. Right, Rob, what do we have to do?
Adam, shut up.
What? I've got stuff to do, did you say? I've got nothing to do. My daughter's banging on the window here, holding her hands up, saying, how many more minutes? I think she thought I said I'd be going 1 hour. But
are you recording in the toilet again?
No.
My son keeps coming out looking at me. I think he wants to watch TV. And I'm like, dude, it's 1 o'clock.
1 in the morning.
Earlier on, you said, stay up as long, as late as you want.
I know, but it's like,
here, do you want a cigarette? Smoke away.
Shit, yeah. Our neighbor's moving. This guy smokes so much weed. So we're going to try to buy his apartment. It's just a studio.
You're talking about your son?
And I'm like, no, my neighbor. Okay. And I'm conflicted. Because he gets really good weed, and so it's like I just go next door, and he's gonna we'll get his apartment, but then he's gone, and then my wife is like, shit, man, we are gonna have to pay real money to fumigate this place. I'm like, no, just leave it the way it is. You get a contact time for at least 6 months.
I like the way you're thinking.
I know Nick is not gonna listen to this, so I don't. I feel comfortable saying that, but I'm gonna miss him.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how are we going, Alex? Should we start wrapping up, or can we?
That's what I was saying. For that you've 2 hour mark, remember all the things you've got to say. No. I'm saying you've got to do all your things.
I've forgotten again.
Your housekeeping things, all the boring shit.
No, but
have to get up and do stuff. I'm gonna
He's talking about the actual podcast stuff and what I have to say at the end. But I've got a headache. I mean, sort of. A bit of a cyclist thing going on.
I don't want any excuses. You had a Barocca earlier. You should be energized.
Well, I need another one. I need a Barocca and Campari without the Barocca, basically. I think with ice and okay. So we got what do we got to say? Thank the listeners. Come and follow us on freaking.
How can your level of incompetence have dropped since
trust me,
the regular level?
It's Saturday
I have that effect
morning.
On people. That's what my mother says.
That's what it is. It's Adam. Oh yeah, my goodness,
it's me. what's different this time? And it's me. So there, blame it on me. Yeah,
I'm used. I used to do that, but I mean, I've been blaming every single guest we've had. But it's everyone else's fault and not mine. But anyway, look.
Maybe the constant is you.
That's
what my mom would always say when I quit jobs. Everyone can't be incompetent. You have to, at some point, Alexander, you have to admit that maybe you're the problem. That's what my mom would always say to me.
Yeah.
Shout out to my mom, who edits the reviews on the website. So thanks for the.
Look, every time I want to do it, he starts talking again.
Sorry.
Go and follow us, and that's it, really. Like and all, subscribe and all that stuff. Fifth Wrist. No, hang on. Fifth Wrist is a site. I'm going to try and do it like Anthony does it on the other channel. And Anthony's so structured and so professional. He says, Fifth Wrist is a site that's put together for real reviews. Go there and review your what do they call them again? Watches? Your watch? follow us on Instagram and follow Fifth Wrist. This is what happens every time. It's like the guests have a heart attack from laughing or something. I can't finish.
If Anthony was dead, he'd be spinning in his grave right now.
He's just shaking his head. He's just sitting there shaking his head thinking, the day we have to co-host a show is just going to go wrong.
Okay. Go follow all the bullshit stuff that you have to do. Go review your watch, review us on iTunes. Go follow Rob Geneva_blue_. What's your Instagram, Adam? Cranoid?
It's just my last name, Craniotis, and it's Craniotes. But as we remember, it was supposed to be IS, not ES, and actually it's supposed to be spelled with a K, not a C. So that, you know, no one's going to find me now. Just go to Red Bar Group or Red Bar Crew, and then see pictures of alcohol.
Yeah, boom. Come along and register and go to one of their lovely events. And
when we can. Yeah, hopefully soon. That now.
I was going to mention,
you've got
36,000 followers. What are you, some sort of superstar? Or is it just because you always post pictures of the Hof? You're a bit of a fan.
I think it's the Hof and sometimes my feet.
I get one of those fetishes.
I have really nice feet.
Right.
I do. I'll take a picture of my feet in front of the fire with some wine. And what happens, though, is if I hashtag feet, sometimes I'll go and look up feet and I start trending. And so you'll see my feet in front of the fire, and then every other picture is like shit.
Weird feet.
It's like down the rabbit hole, man. It gets crazy. And I'll get people following me, and I'll get DMs, and it's like, I'm sorry, the feet is just once in a while. They want more feet. And I think that's where a lot of my followers are. They're just waiting. They're hoping to get a glimpse of the feet. This could be a whole other podcast.
Please no.
Mostly feet.
Have you done everything, Rob?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know.
If you want to join our group chat on Slack, email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and we'll add you into it. And it's basically our Slack group chat is a lot of middle-aged men working out how to use the Slack app for the first time. There's a lot of confusion. People are scared, but
yet another platform to learn.
Yeah,
which we all need these days.
If you want to join that, and Adam, have you got anything else to add before we finally wrap this?
Honestly, I think I've said too much already.
I don't think you've said enough, but that's fine. That's all. I always start saying something and realize I don't have anything to say. And sometimes it takes me 5 minutes. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes to realize I've got nothing to say, so I just keep banging, and then
all the time I'm like, are we going to wrap
it? That's when you say the most genius stuff, you know?
Yeah, it is. Show. Well, not with us, no.
Yeah, fair enough.
You can't hang up because we've got to we'll stop the recording and then we'll say goodbye to everybody. Hi, bye-bye. Is that it? We're done? Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, Adam.
Thanks for listening.
Really,
yeah, that's brilliant, Adam.
2 hours and 58 seconds.
Guys, this was a huge pleasure. Anytime. Sensational. Give me a holler. As you can see, it's not like I have anything else to do. So
yeah, we've worked that out pretty early on.
I can't pretend that I'm busy. So
we'll do it again. When things pick up and things get really busy and you're gonna be actually going places and doing stuff, it might be a bit trickier.
You'll forget us.
Yeah, don't forget us.
Don't forget me. Don't forget me.
Fifth Wrist Radio. It's here forever. It's on the podcast. We cannot forget it. So there it is. We've got to say stay on time. Stay on time. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.